And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT Phil Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Freedoms Phoenix, .com. That was pretty good. All right, we just had Dr. Ron Paul on. It's always good to check in with him, say what's up, you know, and just let him go, man. I tell you, you know, we talked at the end of the hour just a little bit, and go to the archive. You know, his whole thing is, I really wanted to get his impression. Kind of what I figured, you know, I think we don't see it too different, is the promise of what the Constitution was supposed to be, you know, as best a document as they come out with Hamilton up there. Yeah, that's a whole nother history. But the main thing is I'm seeing it's a generational thing. There's a America, you know, I call them MKers, Americans. I mean, even those that are just been really good freedom fighting is always in that structure. You know, we're gonna elect Congress. We're taking our country back. You know, I mean, I just feel it. And to them, country, America, making it great. I'm like, that's why I asked Peter Schiff. We didn't even get to talk about the gold money thing and so on. I would be interested in what Dr. Paul had to say about that. But I'm going, all right, America, what the hell does that mean? But what is America? Is it is an army? You know, is it a geographical location? Is it an ideal? Is it you know, Washington, D.C.? Is it, you know, a shiny badge? I mean, what does that mean? You know, then you have, okay, and great. What's great mean? We can whip your ass. My president can outdo push-ups of yours or something. I mean, you know, what was this all about? Saddam Hussein, I remember him challenging W. Bush to a duel. Yeah, we'll just, you know, 20 paces and turn fire, man. Come on, let's just get her done. We don't got to kill millions of people. You know, I'm like, yeah. You care that much? You know, so I'm you know, what does it mean? Well, Dr. Paul's like, yeah, man, this Levolution thing, it's not done. Not done. We got the revolution. You know, I know the guy did that. You know, come on, man. No, that's always going to be part of that. We're not done. But to do what? To get in charge of the man? You know, we're the man. You know, we're going to get, you know, the drain the swamp and take headshots on swamp creatures while they keep dumping in more swamp creatures. I mean, damn. I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy. And Dr. Paul, I kind of, you know, to sum it up, it's going to be economics. It's amazing how much longer this stuff gets drug out, but, you know, can it go forever? I don't know. It seems like it. You know, Japan is a really good example, and their economy took a dump. They just propped it up. I don't know how they've been getting whatever. You know, they're whatever. The culture is just, you know, winding down because to maintain a population, you need to have, I think it's like 2.3 children or something like that. And it's been under 2 for Japan for a generation or more. And they just have so many old people. They have to do robots just take care of the elderly. You know, that's all the young people are going to be doing is taking care of the elderly in a culture that's used to doing that. Then what? Now that's all you're doing? Taking care of your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents? I don't know how long that goes. You know, there's so much stuff that's kind of baked in the cake. And Dr. Paul, he was saying that with his Liberty Report, they start off with a couple thousand people. They're up to 60,000 subscribers now. They're starting to have, he goes, hey, I'm fake news. Yay! You know, I looks like I made it. Okay. You know? So the solution is what? Yeah, I think we're on the same track. There's not going to be, you know, even with Dr. Paul knowing we were doing the Levolution when we started that, of course they wanted us to do, you know, what they wanted us to do, you know, to kind of focus on, you know, political whatever. And I'm like, no. It's how long can I keep them up on that podium? You know, and all of us, we just, that was the point. I made it clear to everyone. I go, look, you guys don't get it. This is not, I win, don't win. I tell you what is going to go with that, him staying up at that podium. That's what. You know, he's not going to win if they, you know, kick him off in debates. He's not going to win if they don't keep it. He's not going to win if he's not at that freaking podium. He's not going to win if he's not the last guy standing up against the last guy. You know, I tell you that. So that was the focus, certainly from my perspective. And he's still saying it, so I'm like, yay, Dr. Paul. But technology has now given us the ability to vote with our feet, our minds, our wallet voting. You know, all this stuff's coming. I've been on the, I've had walletvoting.com since 03. And I play with that just kind of, you know, there'll come a time. We got blackmarketfriday.com. Had that for years. You know, when am I going to really launch? It's going to be the death that we're going to go, oh, and we're gone. So I got that sitting over there. You know, we got the Pirate Party thing going on. We got, you know, a lot of stuff that, you know, the freedoms, you know, the domicile, you know, the freedom farms and so on. We were out, you know, making more domes out there playing. I'm putting a few together and trying to see, you know, how cheap I can make a big giant. I want at least 3,000 square foot house. And it looks like I'm going to need to have one central dome, a bigger one, like we did for Bob, a 4-phase, 3/4-inch, 28 foot, blah, blah, blah. You know, because that, I'm going, yeah, and add these, and these would be kind of nice bathroom, this bedroom, kind of, you know, just putting it together. Put it on the trailer, boom, pop it up. I'm living large, right, you know, and, you know, 2 days later, boom, boom. But where? Property rights. Where is the government on property? Then you look at what's going on in Dallas, the retirement of the fire and police, it looked like, it doesn't look like it's going to be there, and boom, and all the retirees just started sucking as much money out of it as they could after it reaches $200 million. And they said, whoa, stop, we're not allowing you to take it out anymore, and freezing all, and they're not happy about that either. But we saved it for the future of, hey, man, we were bilking the system, you know, for us to be able to take advantage now, and you promised, and now you're taking, and we're not allowed? Well, there was a lawsuit a few years ago here in the city of Phoenix, that very thing. It was like a couple $100 million that they had to pay back and release to the people. They unconstitutionally deprived them of, we get our money now. But what'd they do? They passed an initiative here in the city of Phoenix in the last election cycle. They said, yep, we can raise taxes and fund and do whatever we want, whenever we want on the fly. This initiative right here, thus saith the voters, because we said so, and we can make sure it's fully funded, whatever we got to do, get over it as we need it. Open check, blank check, whatever. Yeah, that always turns out well. It's inevitable what's coming, and I'm just wanting to advocate in the same way we did philosophically, which Dr. Paul is agreeing, you know, it's a philosophical thing. It's not a we're in charge, it's our turn, we got the power thing. So, I'd love to spend more time with him and get details on things like Mitch McConnell's wife, you know, and I got to express myself, you know, the same thing. You know, happened with Rand. You know, you got all these people that were just, but Ron, he doesn't have the gravitas. He doesn't have the weight. He doesn't have, got to get in. It's got to be, we need a conqueror. We don't want a Messiah like Jesus talking about love and taking spears in the chest and everything in the side. You know, we want somebody that's going to come whip ass. We want a whip asser like Trump. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's going to be like that. Going to go down to someone that can advocate. It's down to us. us, individuals.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
All right, headlines. I keep pinky swearing. I'm not, you know, I'm very untruthful. I just never get to it because I'm always, you know, getting sidetracked. Squirrel. Okay, documents prove massive rigging in silver market. All right, I had to fix the link here. Is one thing I was doing there. Okay, you go to this article, and it was over at Tyler Durden, whoever that is, over at Zero Hedge. And it goes through, there's a lawsuit going on in London, I think. And what happened is they're going, look, you guys have been manipulating the silver market. You collude with these large banks, Deutsche Bank, along with some other groups that are going, and they're starting to turn on each other. It's starting to become obvious. It's starting to come out in discovery. There's texts and emails, and it said, you know, oh, yes, you did. Yeah, we did. So then they go, all right, we made a billion to trillion dollars. What's our fine? I don't know, 60 million, 30 million, a little bit of money here. And you go, okay, we're sorry. We're really sorry. Right. Well, now it's starting to come out. What happens then? I don't know. They'll admit all kinds of stuff, and they do it again. What do you think is going on with the housing thing now? You watch The Big Short, and the same exact same thing is happening again. You know, so this is, we got smoking gun evidence. Plaintiffs are not able to plead with direct smoking gun evidence, including secret electronic chats involving silver traders and submitters across a number of financial institutions, a multi-year, well-coordinated, and wide-ranging conspiracy to rig the prices, the plaintiffs said in their filing. The latest evidence is critical because as the plaintiffs add, the new scheme far surpasses the conspiracy alleged earlier. As a result, the litigants are seeking permission to file a new complaint with the additional allegations, i.e. demand even more reparations from the defendants who have not yet settled, and perhaps even more evidence of ongoing market rigging. Their proposed complaint broadens the base beyond the four banks initially sued to include claims against units of Barclays, Paribas Fortis, Standard Chartered, and Bank of America Corp. Representatives of UBS, BNP, Paribas Fortis, HSBC, Standard Chartered, and Scotiabank didn't immediately respond to emails outside regular business hours seeking comment on the allegations. Barclays and Bank of America declined to immediately comment. The Deutsche Bank documents show, among other things, how two UBS traders communicated directly with two Deutsche Bank traders and discussed ways to rig the market. Now, there, when you go through the document, it's just a chat back and forth between them, some online chat thing they got access to. You know, I got the fix in 3 minutes. I'm bearish. Ha, ha, ha. Massively? Really want to sell silver? Let's go and smash it together. And then, boom, they go and do it, and the timestamp got... This is exactly what a lot of people have been screaming about for ever. What happens when gold and silver, you heard Dr. Paul, he's like, yeah, I see silver as currency. You know, silver is going to be that. Yeah, that's what's going to be. So silver and gold as being, kind of used. Goldmoney.com. You go in there and you just start like, you, and it, if it turns out to be what they say, as they're depicting it, I went and got, I'll get my MasterCard, you know, with my, you know, a few hundred dollars of gold on it, and I can just go use it, and I'm actually trading silver. They do the conversion at 0.5%. I can buy in. Where else can you do that? But am I actually holding it? No. So this is not my big money. It's just my spending money, which a lot of times is my big money. So I go to Donna. I said, all right, if this works out, how many bills do you pay with a credit card? See, phone bill, the water bill, this bill, that bill. I don't know, whatever else she uses in bills and pay, and I'm sure it's some online something. And I'm going, all right, let's do it with gold. We'll make use of it because that's what's given the value of Bitcoin, in my opinion. The more it gets used, it's people that are using it are driving it up. They need it to be able to use it. And I'm going, yeah, they do that with gold. What do you think is going to happen to gold prices when the people take it and start actually using it and it starts transferring? You need to add to the pile and it sits there as you're transfers from this guy's account to that account. And as a merchant, I can start and I can get paid in gold. You know, just transfer me to gold. I don't want them converting the gold into cash and then giving it to me. You know, that's like, you know, like cost money. But only a percent. Credit cards are 2-3%. You use American Express, it's like 4%. As a merchant, I would say, I go, you know, finally it got to where, you know, there were a lot of businesses, they'd buy $300-$400 worth of pizzas and so on to feed a, you know, office space of whatever. I tell you, we knew there was a bubble in .com when we, all of a sudden, within a year, there were all of these tech companies. They got big funding, and they would open up, take a whole floor of a building of what we market, and, you know, give have pizza parties, all kind of, man, woo, we were rock and roll and whatnot, and then we could see it start to go. These guys were starting to go out of business. They were losing their jobs. They'd come, you know, apply for, as drivers, you know, for our restaurant. So I'm going, this is, I can see this is going. It was, and then it went. The .com, boom, this before 9/11. You know, the .com went, and then they tried to inflate the economy with, you know, what, low interest to buy houses. It's just been a continuation of the same thing. Why Dr. Paul is so confident, he knows. You know, I'm old enough, been around, I see, you know, and I'm getting to where I'm old enough, I start seeing. You know, this stuff, it happens. It's like clockwork. And then they just, some big reinflation of optimism. Yeah, we're optimistic. You know, Trump's going to, whatever. What if you know he's not? What if you know he can't? If he really, 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 you wanted to see an explosion of prosperity, property rights for the individual. No, the state can't come in eminent domain everything. No, the state can't just come in and they're going to take and you're not allowed. We passed the law and the money's ours now. Oh, got to take a haircut on you, yada, yada, yada. We promised you and pinky swear and we lied and your retirement is, France. You know, this is happening all over Europe. They're going to India. They're just going into your house, and all that gold that the daughter, the bride wears, the dowry, and it's ours now. Well, it doesn't look like jewelry. You just got it in, you know, bars, and it's ours. This is, wow. And it could happen overnight. It could flip on a dime. You know, this is when we have the high in the stock market. Why? And bonds at 30, let's go invest in bond, the debt of the United States of America for 30 years at none interest when inflation is, God, at least 4, 5, 10 times whatever it is that you're getting in interest. Why in the hell would you do that? I don't know, liquidity, safety, it's going to be worth something. Where else am I going to put it? I mean, what? I have no idea. So they're running into stocks now. It's going up. I'm telling you, man. This is not going to go well. This is all, you know, build up to the end of apogee is going to be reached, and all of a sudden you're going to start going down. Then what? And nothing to stop it. It's got to be, you know, Dr. Paul is doing, you know, what needs to be done, keeping us informed. We're going to keep doing what we need to do, you know, giving you options of how you can live your life and not be a sacrificial lamb on the altar of their crap.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. We're still trying to get hold of Scott, so we'll just go ahead and let him get to us when he can. But I wanted to go over some of the headlines real quick. I keep promising we keep getting off track. But this silver manipulation, metals manipulation thing's not going to go away. And I'm sitting here talking to Donna. I'm going, I know it's Christmas, but can I have a little bit of money? Can I get some more silver? Can I get 1 ounce of gold? Can I get it for Christmas? So that's probably, yeah. But is it going to take a dump again? Right when you think it's going to go, it's when it takes a dump. And I don't care, because this is, all this stuff is going to be, it. If gold and silver ever find its true value, you know, without the manipulation, it'll that pendulum will swing with the freaking rocket on it and go up, and then you might want to take some advantage. I don't know. I mean, what? Nothing's ever made any sense as time goes on. But I've always been better off if I like, yeah, la 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 la, and you just keep buying silver. I just, you know, I whenever it goes down, I go, I feel good about that. Buy that. So I'm probably averaging of all I have. I'm probably down about paid maybe average of everything like $15 an ounce or something. So I'm feeling, you know, pretty good. But I had a lot of friends, they were buying it when it was six. They were taking mortgages out on their house so they could buy it at six. And it would jump down to like, you know, three to nine and down running there. You know, it was like six, man, boom. They went all in and then they sold it and paid off their house. You know, then it still had a bunch left over. I'm going, okay, you know, there's that. You know, am I feeling comfortable about doing something like that? Maybe not. I'm just, we'll see. All right. Well, there's all kinds of other market rigging the banks are going at, too. They paid, the silver thing, Deutsche Bank, to get out from under that, they paid $38 million. Chicken crap money. And that's nothing. You know, $38 million for how much we got? Okay, we'll do that. You know, and where did that go to? You know, who benefited from that? What agency got that? What RICO did that? You know, that was another thing. We had a story on where law enforcement, they were... how they spent their RICO seizure money. And I'm like, wow. I bet everybody didn't know of the vacations and the hookers and whatever for that. How is he trying to... there he is. All right, I got you, Scott.
I'm here, man.
Slacker. All right.
No, I was really busy working hard interviewing Dan McAdams.
All right, well, tell me everything, seeing as how I had to wait on it.
Well, you know, Dan McAdams, he's Ron Paul's alter ego over there on foreign policy stuff at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, the director of it, and formerly was Ron Paul's foreign policy advisor for many years in his congressional office. And he's really good on all this stuff, and especially including Syria and all the recent developments going on there. So we were talking about how Syrian government forces backed by the Russians, the Iranians, and Hezbollah have successfully kicked al-Qaeda forces out of almost all of East Aleppo. And so, you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen next, but it's a major loss for the CIA-backed terrorists there.
Why? I mean, why do I even care? What is going... We just had, by the way, we just had Ron Paul on, and, cool. You know, we were talking about, you know, what needs to be done and next and whatever. Before we get into that, just go ahead. Tell me Aleppo. Why do I care? What the hell does Aleppo mean to me or even to them? Why?
Well, everybody cares because people are being killed in horrible, violent deaths and preventable ones.
Yeah.
The reason you care is because it's all your government's fault. Not that it's entirely your responsibility, Ernie, but the reason that you do what you do in part is because they do what they do in your name and with your money, and it's wrong.
Okay, and what did they do in my name?
It's not just that they're backing Hezbollah, which would be horrible, right? It's that they're backing guys who are literally sworn to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. America backs al-Qaeda. Obama and John McCain both, and all their generals and all their spies, are guilty of the highest treason. They've taken al-Qaeda that was almost dead, and they completely brought it back to life. It's more powerful than it's ever been before, and it's because of the GD Democrats. And it's been going on for 5 years straight in front of everybody's nose, and it's the most outrageous thing in the world since Bush invaded Iraq unprovoked.
Okay, so Aleppo means what to me? Other than in my name, they're killing, you know, people, and so I say stop. But they did it. Why? What was the goal? Where is Trump and Putin on this thing? How is it that they're beating al-Qaeda, and that's going to mean what to me? Aleppo goes one way or the other, and I'm like, okay, why am I concerned? What? I don't have enough war or enough people they're killing or enough maiming that they're doing or enough in my name that they're taking advantage of and overthrowing and doing. I mean, you know, Aleppo, why do I care about that? You got to help me out, man.
Well, you want to narrow it down to this battle in this city? It's a major loss for America's al-Qaeda forces attempting to overthrow the government in Damascus.
Okay.
And replace it with an al-Qaeda head-chopping pseudo-caliphate.
Okay.
And a whole other war against that.
All right, so and now so, they're in a situation to where the CIA is finally, I guess we lost this one. We're going to stand down and wait.
Well, we don't
see
know that
Trump
yet.
Says.
No, I mean, we have to wait and see what's going to happen here. I mean, clearly what's going on is that the Assad government and the Russian government are in a big hurry to beat the al-Nusra Front, that is Syria and al-Qaeda, as hard as they possibly can before Trump takes office, so that even if all the pressure in the world by the CIA and the military on Trump is to back the rebels, that hopefully so-called rebels, that there just won't be enough rebels for him to support, and that he will be in a position to go along with what we all know is his first instinct, which is to back off the policy of overthrowing the government in Syria and instead focusing on killing the terrorists that are trying to overthrow it.
Okay, regime change in Syria is going to start going away. I mean, that's the main thing for me, as I'm going, all right. So all this means is that the U.S. policy under Trump or circumstances on the ground and Putin being buds and we keep Assad is that all of a sudden the requirement that Assad be gone is going away?
Well, that's what Trump has wanted. That doesn't mean that that's what he's going to get. But yeah, I mean, that as I've told you for quite a while now, Trump has legitimately, you know, it's one thing he's been consistent on and obviously really meant what he said when he was saying, I don't want to do regime changes against these governments anymore. Now, that doesn't mean he's calling off the war on terrorism. It means he's calling off overthrowing these secular governments in the name of the war on terrorism. And so, you know,
well,
it's like turning the
governments
war from 100 miles an hour
after?
Down to 75. But it's still a worldwide war with special forces and drones and spies and killers all over the place.
When you say he's overthrowing secular governments, you know, what about non-secular governments? What about, you know, religious pounding? I mean, you know, why would you say secular governments as opposed to
others? Because Saddam, Gaddafi, and Assad are all basically atheists who worship only themselves. We're nationalist fascists who shave their chins in the morning and hold their country together under, you know, Westphalian nation-state type principles.
So we're going to have wars
by
on
overthrowing,
beards?
By working to overthrow those three secular dictators, we've created Jihadistan.
Okay, but we're not, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, any leader that wears a beard's fair game or something? I mean,
well, you know, I mean, this is the whole thing about it, as I've complained this whole time. Donald Trump don't read. Donald Trump doesn't really know anything. And so he's surrounding himself with experts, top men who know just what to do, and they all hate Iran. And why? I don't know. I mean, some of them have a personal grudge as Marines. Some of them just are under the influence of Israel lobby money or military industrial complex money. But, you know, the Ayatollah over there makes a hell of a great whipping boy for a Cold War or for a hot one. So, you know, so we're not out of danger of war with Iran. I think we're almost back to 2006 all over again right now. I hate to say.
All right. Well, it was a bad deal. Bad deal. We got to redo the deal. Is there going to be a new Iran nuclear deal, Trump deal? You know, and then the money that they were supposed to release, did it actually get released? Is it still in limbo in escrow somewhere? Or does Iran have it now? What happened to the money, Scott?
I think they've got most of it now.
All right. More. Scott Horton, anti-war. See what's going on in the world when we come back. Yeah, that's good. You know, Ron is, I kind of got the impression from what he was saying and the questions asked that, he's not, you know, it's the Lovolution continues. You know, it's all, you know, education and people, and he has 60,000 people subscribing to his Liberty Report now, so he's encouraged by that, and he's been classified as fake news, so he's got that badge, so he's all happy about that. And then, so he's going to continue, you know, just doing what he was doing, and the podium is now his desk, and he's working hard every day and, you know, going that route, and I want to do the decentralized thing and have fun with that, so we'll see if we can overlap efforts, you know, as time goes on. I got an idea.
He's the greatest American hero ever, Ron Paul is.
There's nobody
who's done as much as him in probably all of world history to spread not just, you know, the concept, the idea, not just to bring it up, but to really teach and explain individualism.
You know, one thing that I had to talk with him about was
policy and all of just the nature of man and his relationship to this state. Ron Paul is the greatest American hero ever.
You know, one thing that I wanted to make sure is we talked about is this last Saturday I went to G. Edward Griffin's Freedom Force International Third Congress of whatever, and it was basically on, you know, the inconvenient lie, you know, climate change, that kind of thing, and how much we're being BS'd and why, and they just want to control the economy, sustainable, blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of good guys we're going to have on as guests next week that I'm like, wow, this guy, okay, I want to hear this, this, and this. But the one thing that I got, and I asked Ron about, and I think he understood, is that this a generational devotion to the Constitution like a spiritual document. And I'm going, man, if you read the Constitution straight through without the Bill of Rights or Declaration of Independence, it's just a power grab of might as well call him king, you know? And is it a generational thing? Is it a real belief? Is it, you know, are you still advocating for the Constitution and not? And I kind of got the impression more it's the promise, you know, it was the idea how well they could do the concept, the promise behind it, and said, all right. Because I don't see America great being an F-16 kicking the shit out of everybody. You know, I'm not sure what they mean by America and great. If it doesn't go down to the individual and property rights, if I get to do what I want and bite me and decentralize and with my friends and I'll take care of it and I don't need the blue pages and the white pages, if you go down that road, then I can see the benefit of this. I think Ron sees that. I'm just wondering, you know, his supporters are constitutional worshiping young and older people. It's a segment of society. It's a real faith in the Constitution, or it's an example of what can, or the promise. I'm not really sure, because I don't, all the manipulation and all the financial stuff that's going to happen and all the wars and all the, there's not going to be any justification for this entity that's doing it. And I just, so that's why when you say Aleppo, I'm like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. What the hell does that even mean? You know, I why am I caring? You know, because it's a manifestation of whether we're going to have regime change or go to war with Russia or not. You know, you got news on some other hot spots around the world? You know, we got, you know, China or Ukraine or Mediterranean or Saudi Arabia or anything?
Hey, I don't know. Whatever you want to talk about, man, you want to look at antiwar.com. There's stuff going on all over the place. America's starving little kids to death in Somalia and Yemen still, of course.
All right, here we're coming back. Here we go.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Gotta wait. And that's why all the time. I just gotta wait. That's all I got. I just gotta wait. And then all of a sudden, it just becomes apparent. Well, we're talking to Scott Horton. Of course, he's got Syria on the mind, what's going on in Aleppo. But I'm interested in Yemen, too. Yemen keeps coming up back in the headlines every now and then, but what was Yemen all about? Where are we now? What are we holding Saudi Arabia to any kind of standard of anything? Tell us, give us a nutshell of what's going on in Yemen, will you please, Scott?
Sure, man. Yeah, and this is the second worst tragedy going on the planet right now after Syria. It's right up there. It's just absolutely horrible, and the worst effect is the blockade, the Saudi blockade. But the war has gone on for, 22 months, almost 2 years now. Yemen is the poorest country in the Middle East. If everyone, picture in your mind the Arabian Peninsula there, and this is the southwest corner of it, just adjacent to Somalia and Djibouti, and just across what's called the Bab al-Mandeb, which is the opening of the Red Sea to the Arabian Sea, the Gulf of Aden, the Arabian Sea there. So we're talking about the southwest corner, of the Arabian Peninsula. It's the poorest nation in the Arab world. And what happened was Obama, when he came into office, he paid the government in the capital city to allow the CIA to kill Al-Qaeda guys with drones. And all he did was make them more and more and more powerful as he bombed them. And this is what General McChrystal calls insurgent math. You kill one, you get 10 more. You'd think they would knock it off, but no, they just keep going. Well, so they kept growing Al-Qaeda bigger and bigger as they bombed them. But all the money and guns that they gave to the dictator in the capital city, he used to attack a separate group of dissident Shiites called the Houthis, who live up in the north of the country. And he attacked them 6 times, and he lost, Ernie, 6 times. And every time he attacked them, with all the money and guns Obama had given them as a bribe so that America could attack Al-Qaeda, they beat him, and they got bigger and bigger and more powerful as well, right? Then the Arab Spring came, and everybody wanted rid of the dictator, the American-backed dictator. His name was Saleh, and he was, like Mubarak in Egypt, a quote-unquote president. But his elections had always been fake, and he was really just a military strongman. Well, Hillary Clinton came, and instead of letting the people of Yemen work it out, she worked a deal with the Saudis to kick him out of power and replace him with the vice president, this guy Hadi. Well, when Saleh left, you still with me?
Yeah.
When Saleh left power, he brought half the army, or maybe more than that, with him. He just said, hey, well, I don't want to lose power. So, hey, army divisions, you guys are still loyal to me, right? And then guess what? He went up north where his enemies, the Shiite Houthis, were. And it turns out he's a Shiite, too. He's a Zaydi Shiite, just like them. He just hadn't been a member of the Houthi movement, which is a political movement. But it turns out he was basically, you know, he had enough in common with them. He made an alliance with these guys who beat him in war 6 times. And now he's merged his army divisions with theirs. And then at the end of 2014, beginning of 2015, they marched south and they took the capital city of Sana'a. Well, at that point, the Saudis flipped out and launched a war. And it was partially also because of Saudi politics. We're all libertarians here, public choice theory. Every government official is an individual searching for their own selfish best interest, just like everyone else, not the national interest. There's no such thing. And so what happened was there was a brand new king. The king had died. There was a brand new king in Saudi, and his young son, 29 years old, was the crown prince, the real king, because the king is a senile old man. He's young, and he's the crown prince and the new defense minister, and he had to prove what a tough guy he was by launching this war. Was a big part of what was going on, the domestic politics inside Saudi, so that this new young king in waiting could consolidate his position. And then Obama completely went along with it. And this is no scoop by an investigative reporter. This is handed to the New York Times on a silver platter by the White House, was the explanation of why they did this. And it was to placate the Saudis because of the Iran deal. Now, the Iran deal really does secure Iran's civilian nuclear program and double extra super duper guarantee its civilian nature, which secures Saudi Arabia's security interests. It helps them. But on the other hand, it opens up the possibility of rapprochement between the United States and Iran, in which case Saudi has everything to lose because they are the linchpin of our foreign policy over there. And they don't want to go back to the bad old days when America has Iran to police all the Arabs, right? Right now we're using the Arabs to police Iran. So that was why they needed to be placated. They were afraid they were losing their place in our Middle Eastern order, the Saudis. But so now, for almost 2 years, Ernie, Obama has really entirely enabled this. And this war could not happen at all without the USA. It's American planes, American bombs, American money, American contractors doing all the care and feeding and maintenance on all the planes. It's American spies and mercenaries and military intelligence officers who are picking the targets, who are programming the GPS coordinates for these planes. It's the U.S. Air Force that is doing the mid-air refueling. And I have two hearsay rumors. This isn't confirmed, but there's real reason to believe. I think, you know, two hearsay rumors from different sources, but credible ones, that there are even American pilots who are riding in the back seat of these F-15s, holding these little Saudi princelings' hands all the way to their civilian targets, where they're bombing hospitals, bombing marketplaces, bombing villages off the face of the earth, bombing funerals, deliberately bombing civilian targets. And I know I roll my eyes too when Human Rights Watch puts out a thing, because a lot of times they're just trying to lie us into war. But when they accuse the United States, usually it's because they have really good reason to. And in this case, they just put out a report. Human Rights Watch says that as the Obama administration announces that they plan to sell even more weapons to Saudi, Human Rights Watch is urging that you may be breaking the law and be literally, legally complicit in war crimes. Never mind morally, never mind the actual fact and the truth and reality, but legally speaking, Obama, you could go to prison for this, which of course isn't really true because power is power and power overrides law any day. But the point being is that Human Rights Watch is right. America is helping Saudi wage a war on the civilian population of Yemen. Again, the poorest country in the Middle East. They already imported huge amounts of their food because the IMF and the World Bank had forced them to change their crops and ruin their agriculture system in the past. So they're almost completely dependent on imports. And they're starving to death. I mean, you just type in, anybody listening to this, you just type in Yemen starving. And you just look, Oxfam and Human Rights Watch and Amnesty and all these NGOs and all these independent journalists and people who you couldn't impugn some grudge have been warning about this for almost 2 years. And people, they're just dropping like flies.
Okay,
and there's cholera
now what
and all kinds of preventable disease.
What end is Saudi Arabia trying to attain? There's going to
They're trying to, that's the point I really should have stuck to. They're trying to overthrow the Houthis, force them out of the capital city, and install their guy Hadi in power, which is impossible goal. And Rand Paul really had this right, Ernie. He went on, Rand Paul went on CNN, and I forget if it was Blitzer or Tapper, but he said, listen, I'm serious about this, guys. If we keep this up, we could literally have Al-Qaeda ruling the capital city of Sana'a. And he is 100% right. It ain't Hadi. If America and Saudi win this war, it ain't Hadi who's coming back to power. It's going to be the Al-Qaeda guys. The ones who sent the underpants bomber to blow up the plane over Detroit will be ruling Sana'a, the capital.
Well, we need bad guys. We need three bad guys. It's always, you know, Osama bin Forgotten, Saddam Hussein, and Kim Young, whatever, grandson. And then you go, then one drops off. And okay, we'll add Aminashed, you know, Aminajad in there, and then he'll replace Osama. And then we'll add, this, oh, and Saddam's gone. We've got to have, oh, we're going to have a bad guy in Yemen. Yay! Now we'll get back up to our three. It's almost like they put these people in the position so they have somebody to complain about, so they have a justification to be there, so they can spend a bunch more money. I, you know, and that's why Scott's here, help explain it to us why they are there. There we go. Yep, two segments. Boom, done. You know.
Yep.
All right. So how's everything with you? You staying busy? What are you gonna do for the holidays? You demand?
Yeah, you know, we're gonna do Christmas. I love it, man. You know, as best we can. The wife had her birthday the other day, so hung out with friends and had a cool time there and, you know, family stuff.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I get the feeling that, you know, it comes January 20th. Okay, this is what we're doing. January 20th, that evening, we're having a party here, and that happens to also be Inauguration Day, but the 21st is the 10th anniversary of the first Ron Paul meetup that started here. So when we, you know, do that January 20th or 21st, I think it was, boom. So that's a good enough excuse for, you know, we have a party. And that Saturday evening, you know, it's going to be the inauguration. We're going to have the party, and then 10 years, boom, and we're off into something. And I'm just going, yep, that's going to be the starting pistol for, I have no idea what's coming, but I think we're all going to be needed as much or more than ever before just to keep this, because this fake news thing, They are. When I got Brian Williams going up there bitching about fake news, I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
You know what? I got to tell you, man. I mean, I think the Democrats are just, and the whole establishment, they're flipping out as bad as they can and whatever. But I think the very worst that's going to happen here, honestly, is going to be horrible Facebook algorithms censoring us. But the fact of the matter is, and I don't know if you saw this, man, but it's really funny. You can find it in my Twitter feed. There was a report, and you know what? Who knows during the Trump years? I don't know. There was a reporter at the White House press briefing saying to the White House press briefer guy, "Wah, pass a law to stop the fake news." And the White House press guy is saying, "Well, you know, I mean, we have the First Amendment, and so ultimately we can't, you know." And the reporter goes, "Yeah, but wah, fake news is why Hillary Clinton lost, and it's not fair, and you got to do something. You got to do something." And after all, you're the White House. Can't you do something? And he goes, "Well, you know, look, man, I mean, the First Amendment really says that, no, we can't. We're the government, and we don't have the power to tell people what to say or not. That's just not part of what we do. We're actually forbidden from doing stuff like that." And then the reporter won't give it up and makes him, for the third or even fourth time, makes the White House press spokesman guy, speaking on behalf of Obama, say, "Look, man, no, we're not proposing a law. We don't have any authority to do that. The courts wouldn't let it stand anyway. The First Amendment prevents stuff like that, okay?" And, like, that's what it takes to get the reporter to stop crying. What is this nonsense about you don't have the authority to censor me?
The reporter was playing the role of Jeff Gannon Guckert sitting there being the guy
exactly.
to go do a speech
or
in front
even
of
worse,
blah, blah,
not
blah.
Even Gannon, like, hired to be fake, but really this is just what a liberal NBC-type reporter thinks?
Yeah,
this is
how
they
put
think?
Him there. You know, that minimum job requirement. This is the point. You know, I am the diminishment of the place in our minds that Washington even has, even with Trump, certainly with Generation Next. I am hoping and want to, you know, dogpile on the concept, the idea that it just doesn't freaking matter. And the first appointments that he's been making, doing, I'm going, God, Mitch McConnell's wife, seriously? I mean, you know, somebody explain that one to me.
I have no idea.
You know, Elaine Chao, Transportation Secretary, Mitch McConnell's wife. Yay.
Well, the whole thing, I mean, look, he's putting nothing but generals and billionaires in there. He put in, I don't know if he's just joshing with us or what, but he nominated the guy for literally the CEO from Carl's Jr. You know, straight out of Idiocracy. Although I saw the report last night that said that this guy's been
credibly
accused of beating his wife over and over and over again, so he might have to withdraw that one.
Herman Cain? Is that who you're talking about?
Huh?
Cain? Herman Cain or whatever his name was?
No, that's the guy from Mr. Gaddy's or Godfather's Pizza.
Yeah,
this
I
is,
thought you said that.
I forget his name. But it's the guy literally from Carl's Jr. I'm the Secretary of State,
okay.
Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
I, you know, well, Hillary has shown her face finally, you know, saying she's again, you know, fake news. They're all against fake
news.
Well,
yeah, which is, isn't that great that I think she is just such the perfect caricature. Like, she's pure flaw. You know what I mean? Like, there's no good part of her. So she always lives exactly down to whatever you could expect of her. So she's been gone. She hasn't had a thing to say for a few weeks now. She surfaces finally. And is it to talk about any important thing? Donald Trump is appointing a guy who is against the minimum wage. That's a good liberal issue, right? But she doesn't complain about that. Donald Trump is appointing all these generals. And that really worries me. She's not complaining about that. What does she do? She comes out and she goes, "We have fake news because I blame fake news for why I lost." Because to her, this is still all about her. And, you know, there was a headline on a day where Bernie Sanders goes to join some protesters striking about something, whatever it was. And Hillary is throwing a party for all of her millionaire donors on the same day. And it's not even a secret. Like, that's how she thinks. Like, this is, you know. That's what you do, right? What's the problem? Why is everybody looking at me? She doesn't have any clue what's so horrible about her. And so, yeah, she'll get up there and give a whole thing about fake news as though what happened to her is the center of everyone else's concern right now, when it's clearly not. I think the whole thing, the whole scandal of the fake news thing is going to go away real quick. Because after all, the incoming president, it's his people who believe every fake news story. Because they're just literate enough to read a stupid headline, and they don't know really anything in the world to compare it to, so they'll believe anything, you know? Well, that's true. We've talked about that for a long time.
What role is Obama going to have?
Especially right wingers.
Obama's going to have a role in the post presidency of what? He's going to stay in Washington D.C. with the kids. He's going to have his own think tank of go around pal with of something, you know. I
wonder about that. I kind of doubt that he's going to play too much of a role, because former presidents just aren't welcome in that role. Bill Clinton and George W. Bush both did not do that to their successor, so I think he's going to mostly stay out of it, but we'll see.
All right, man, I gotta get the next hour. Good talking to you.
Thanks, bud.
Talk to you later. Bye.